Welcome into this Five Clubs conversation. I'm Gary Williams. In my career, there have been certain people who have been very influential. And some of them were influential before I even met them. Some I never even met, but they were big influences. In the case of the person who's going to join me, he was influential before I met him. He was influential not only after I met him and worked for him, and he continues to be, because it's always important to have advocates in life. And Christopher Mad Dog Russo has been those things for me. I worked for him in 2009 and 2010. I was the first morning host on Mad Dog Radio when the channel was launched. And his interest in golf is interesting. I don't know the full story as to when he came to the game, why he was interested in the game. But guess what? We're going to find out all of that and a whole lot more, because he is the Five Clubs conversation. Today's Five Clubs conversation is brought to you by Golf Pride. Golf Pride knows that a grip isn't only a grip. It's the one piece of equipment in your hands on every single shot. You might not know it, but it has a huge impact on your game. In fact, Golf Pride recently conducted a first-of-its-kind study showing the impact of worn versus new grips. It showed that on average, a focus group of adept golfers gained an extra 2 yards of carry when they played with new grips. So what are you waiting for? Refresh your grips. Refresh your game. Visit golfpride.com today to learn more. Golf Pride. Respect the grip. And with that, we welcome in a guy who's having a period in his 60s, kind of like Sam Snead did in his 50s. How can you have a renaissance like this gentleman is having? There he is, Christopher Mad Dog Russo. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, my main man, Mr. Williams, the golf king. How are you today, pal? Okay.
I'm doing great. Thank you for doing this. Listen, I know that you've had an affinity for golf for a large part of your life, but I'm curious, as someone who grew up in Syosset with great golf literally all around you, that you did not have a curiosity or an interest in playing a lot at a younger age. Why is that?
Well, I think it's very important with golf to have your father into it.
Yep.
Or have brothers who are into it, older brothers specifically. And I didn't have either. My father was not a big golf fan. I remember one time we went to Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, vacation. I would say it was probably about 73, 74. And my father and my mother dropped me off at a course, you know, at the Sea Pines. And they gave the guy about $20 to make sure I got golf games in a course of a week or 2 week period. But you got to have your father, you got to have some family, an uncle. You need to have somebody to sort of introduce you to the game and do those things, you know, set up grip, stance. It's a very frustrating sport if you don't have the fundamentals down. And I never really had that. My father never played golf growing up in Flushing in the late 30s and the 40s. So as a result of that, I didn't have that influence. Now, my kids have had that, but the only one who's really picked up on it is my oldest, who has turned into be a decent golfer. You know, he can... You know, last year he shot an 81 at Point Judith with Tom Moore. And that's a good golf course up there in Rhode Island. So he's got a chance to be pretty good. But for me, Gary, I just never had that foundation. Plus, I went to boarding school in upstate New York. It snowed constantly. So I'm not going to go out there in September and May. And I like the team sports better. So golf never really was a factor in my maturation process.
But you do have a passion for tennis, which you do alone. Whereas with golf, look, it's a very fair point that I had my dad. The reason people always say, why do you love golf so much? It gave me uninterrupted time with my father. And I realized that early on, my intuition told me that, my gosh, like, I'm getting him for 3, 4, 5 hours by myself at a time. The tennis thing for you, you have a passion for it in playing it. in following the sport. As far as golf, in terms of your interest and who was in the game as you were growing up, do you remember having a curiosity about players? Was it Jack? Was it Arnold Palmer? Were there players, as your passion for sports was becoming inflamed, were there golfers who you were interested in?
No. And the tennis is because my mother played tennis, so that's one of the reasons why I got involved in tennis. But no to golf. If you ask me, I know all about it now.
Yep.
But if you ask me what happened at the 75 Masters, was that the year with Weisskopf, Johnny Miller, and Jack?
Yeah.
I would struggle. I know a lot about it now, but I don't remember watching it then live. I remember when I started, I remember in 83, I was doing sportscasts. No, it was later than that. It was 87. I was doing sportscasts on WMCA when I just got to New York. And when Larry Mize made that chip to beat Norman and somebody else in that playoff on the 11th hole, I, on the air then Monday morning, I did not emphasize how unbelievable a shot that was. I just said it was like a putt. And my father's boss, for whatever the reason, listened and raised hell with me that I didn't emphasize the Mize chip well enough. You know why? Because I didn't watch it. So the golf and the golf, not tennis.
Yep.
Golf is a sport. I remember 86 well, but golf is a sport from a watching perspective. I didn't start picking up on it really until I came to New York. Played it a little bit, followed a little bit, but it wasn't appointment television. I remember Jack, winning in Bordershaw. I used to love Tom Shaw, the old golfer Tom Shaw. But it's not like I can, and I have some remembrances of Miller's 63 at Oakmont, but I don't have, like I do with the other sports, definitely do not have the memory or the love of the early day, me growing up as a kid, following it. It wasn't until a little later in life that I picked up on it, read all the books, read Mark Frost's book on the match back in the early 50s, read the Hogan book with Sampson. It wasn't until a little later where I got, started to play the big courses, where I had a little feel of it. And the other problem with it is, Gary, is you know better than anybody, because you did go to Shorehaven with me. I'm not a great golfer. So, I'm a much better tennis player, and I think that hurts too. And you have little kids, it's hard to go out there and play golf 4 hours on a weekend when you have four kids who are, basically seven and under. That makes it tricky as well.
No question. But you do have an uncanny recall on when people get into your areas of strength, of which there are many. It's extraordinary recall. And you actually, even saying the 87 Masters, you said there was somebody else in that playoff. It was Seve. Seve was eliminated on the 10th hole. It was one of the saddest scenes, him walking back up the hill and CBS panned back to him. He's walking with his brother who was caddying for him. And then obviously Mize chipped in on 11. Let me ask you this. So when you and Mike started, was there an event? Look, major championships, Westchester had an annual PGA Tour event. You guys didn't have the autonomy that you have now when you left for Sirius. Like, you talk about whatever you want to talk about, and you devote real time to talking about golf. You bring on guys who cover the game. You've had Faldo on a lot. You've had Nobilo on a lot. You have Andrade on for majors. You love Lerner and Chambly. When you were with Mike, did you guys ever go to any majors that were in the major metropolitan area?
Oh, absolutely. We went to the first one. We went to a couple at Bethpage, that first major there. We covered on a Friday, second day. We covered the 93 U.S. Open at Bordershaw.
Yeah.
Jansen won, and then we flew right to Chicago to do Suns Bulls. So, yes, we did cover some majors. I went to the first FedEx Cup deal at Westchester.
Yeah.
Where I was at Westchester, and I did a 5-hour show. It rained like crazy and had a fireplace on behind me. It was that cold. But yes, we did some golf. I'm trying to think where else. So it would have been a couple at Bethpage. It would have been once at Bordershaw. It would have been, there's a couple of more. Well, and then of course since I've been to Shinnecock and everything else with in the last few years with
How about
us
Wingfoot?
But
How about
yes,
Wingfoot 97 with Davis Love, the PGA there?
Yeah, PGA. I don't know if I went to that and followed it carefully. I don't know if we did a show up there. I don't think we did. And I remember that PGA. I was so impressed with Chris Berman, because on a hot Saturday, and he had a leg issue. He just came off surgery. He walked that course 18 holes to follow the leaders, which I was very, very impressed with. So, yeah, Mike and I followed the golf. I wouldn't say it was in between casual and serious. When Tiger came in 97, we were all over it. I would say in between casual and serious. It wasn't a focal point day in and day out, but we were on top of the majors. And then once we started to play, that helps a lot. Because
sure.
Once you start playing golf, you get a lot more into it. So you put all that together, I'd say in the early 90s, I started to pay attention to it a great deal more than I did, of course, say in the 80s or when I was in Orlando, Florida. Despite the fact that one time I followed Arnold Palmer trying to qualify for the 86 U.S. Open, he did that at Bay Hill. Despite the fact that I covered Bay Hill a lot of tournaments, and the one year in which Fuzzy beat Payne Stewart, I followed Fuzzy around that golf. I think it was Fuzzy over Payne. Maybe the other way around. But I did a lot of shows at Bay Hill. So I did plenty of golf a little bit in Orlando. But on a day-in, day-out basis, it wasn't a focal point of the show.
When you and Mike, when like you said, you guys started playing a little bit of golf. But you guys always loved the big event. So when Tiger, do you remember the aftermath of the 97 Masters? Did you
absolutely.
That Monday? Look, this is the week after opening day in baseball, and nobody can talk baseball like the two of you. Did you guys devote a large portion of that Monday to talking about it?
I remember we did, and I remember we did that first day a lot, because on that first day, he shot a 40 on the front, didn't
yep.
he? And a 32 on the back?
30.
Is that what it was?
40, 30.
He shot the 72?
Shot 70.
So I remember we followed that very carefully. That first day on the air, Masters was on. Mike loved the Masters, Nance. So you got to put that in the mix. We covered that and we were on top of that. And that was only 7 or 8 years into Mike and the Mad Dog. We covered that very, very carefully. So we were all over Tiger. You know, he's a big name. Nance with the golf, that's got a lot to do with it.
Yep.
And Mike loved Nance. But we were all over golf and CBS in that period there. So again, Mike golf expertise or my golf chronicling has developed over time. When I first began in the early 80s, in Jacksonville, and I remember that first golf tournament. I remember when I first started in Jacksonville in March of 83, our morning guys did big shows over at Ponte Vedra.
Sure.
And I said, geez, really? Who cares about this? Because, a young kid like myself, 24 years of age, we're not talking about was it called the TPC then? I don't even know what
it was. Yeah, they had already had, in 1974, they started the Players' Championship. The
tournament, so it's
Players.
74. So,
but they moved it around. That actually, the event was played in Atlanta, and it made its way to Sawgrass. The stadium course, 1982 was the first year they played it at the stadium course,
year.
And Jerry Pate won it. And so 83, you're there. And it's becoming, look, it was in its infancy as far as it being there. But yeah, I mean, I get why you were doing it, but you didn't understand it. You didn't understand why they were there.
I remember I had just started in Jacksonville at that radio station at the time, and they all covered the golf, and I could not understand the fascination. I was more wrapped up on Sixers, Lakers. I could not understand the fascination. Now, this is obviously 40 years ago, but I could not understand the fascination. Jeez, this golf, really? Who cares? And I was in March of 83, and that's when I just began at WEXI, 1280 AM, in Jacksonville, Florida. I probably was, on the air maybe a couple of weeks. That's how brief it was. So there's an example. Me coming in from New York, starting at a station in Jacksonville, and all of a sudden I'm covering the Bay Hill. But I do remember in the mid-80s, remember Larry Guest was a huge Greg Norman fan. And Larry Guest was the Orlando Sentinel. And I'll tell you a big piece of controversy. 86, the Monday after Nicklaus came back, Larry's column in the Orlando Sentinel was on Norman screwing up on 18. and was not on Jack Nicklaus's comeback. And that was a huge story that Larry Guest, a huge writer, put it out. 46 years of age, Nicklaus just does an incredible thing. What are you shooting the back nine that day? 31? I don't even know. What are you shooting?
He shot 30.
30 on the back nine. And his column the next day is on Norman. And everybody went nuts. And I remember me being on the air on a Monday in Orlando after Nicklaus wins the Masters. That was a big topic. So, you know, there was a time in the mid-80s I was into it. I got to New York. I got out of it again. Didn't know about the Larry Mize chip. And then I got back into it with, of course, with Mike. And, of course, when you play more, you get back into it more. Throw in Shorehaven, in which, you know, I began, about 05, 06. You came in 08 or 09.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I start playing at events. I start getting an idea about match play, handicaps, all those things, and then I'm all in. But I didn't get all in into golf probably until I was 50 years of age.
Yeah. Well, and I want to talk about what you did for your 60th birthday, because it's a reflection of using golf as the ultimate form of fellowship. I mean, you're bringing, you know, this important group of men together. And what did you do? You went and you played golf in Scotland. I do want to talk about that. Let me ask you this about, as Tiger is ascending, did you feel any sense of whether it was responsibility, obligation, curiosity? When he was doing what he did starting in 2000, he won those three majors. Did you start going, wait a second, this is beyond historic stuff? Did you start to look at what others had done? Did you have a baseline of what Hogan had done and what Nicklaus had done?
Yeah, we knew the historical aspect of it. No question about it. I mean, Tiger was a magnet, gets calls. You know, he's winning every major.
You were getting phone calls on him.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, I don't, in the middle of February, no.
Right, right. But in the middle of the summer of 2000, as he's doing what he was doing, you guys were devoting segments and hours talking about Tiger Woods.
Absolutely, absolutely. Plus, Mike, one of those years, went to the Masters for a weekend. So with Nance, he was completely into that. You remember that, Eddie, when Mike went to the Masters? Oh, he was completely into it. And he did a show with us, and I was back in New York, and he was so into the Masters. That was his favorite tournament. And then, of course, you know, you had the first time, was that 03 when it was at when it was in Bethpage? Was that 2003?
No, 02.
02. I know we did
right after 9/11, and so it was right after 9/11. So 2002, that was a very emotional thing. You're having it there for the first time. It's on the heels of 9/11. It's in June of 2002. No, that was a big, big deal. And of course, Tiger won the golf tournament.
And I also remember in 06, was that when Mickelson blew it at Wingfoot?
Yes.
All right. I'll tell you this quick little story. Lerner, who I did not realize at the time, was a big fan. So the
huge fan of yours. Yeah.
Golf Channel calls me up and says, Chris, we'd love to have you on, you know, in our prime time window. Can you get here? And, you know, I didn't know that much about the Golf Channel. This is 15 years ago. But I said, you know, I said, yes, you know me, I love to perform. So I said, yes. But when I got there, don't forget, FAN was in Astoria, Queens. So the show's over at 6:30. It was in the summer. So it was 6:30. So getting my rear end to Wingfoot via train to Mamaroneck and getting a shuttle and figuring out where the Golf Channel set was an absolute disaster. And when I got there, I must have been a cranky son of a gun, because Dottie Peppers was giving me a hard time. And that was in 06. I did get on and we did it, but I must have been a complete jerk, because I still feel bad about it. I don't know if Lerner remembers, but he's a big fan. You know, Lerner's a big fan. And I remember that specifically. So there's an example of 06. I'm still at FAN, and I ventured to Wingfoot. It was during a week. I don't remember if it was, you know, if a practice round, or it was probably a practice round during a week. And I got up, and it was a pain in the neck to get to Wingfoot from Astoria, Queens, without a car, train. That's not easy. But I remember I did that. And when I got there, I was all ticked off because it took me hours. I couldn't find where the set was, the shuttle, and I was in 2006. So there's an example of me getting into the sport and understand. And I know, and I obviously must have thought it was important enough, because I journeyed up there. I didn't get a car service. I did the mass transit. So I wouldn't have done that if I didn't think the Golf Channel was important. So I got into it as we went along. And now I'm totally into it. And as you said, you know, I won't do golf necessarily in the middle of January, but I call you to come on. You give me lots of good information on LIV and all those things. I cover all the majors. It's hard to get the players on.
Yep.
But I'll get Freddie on. I'll get Freddie Couples on. So I'll do what I have to do to cover the sport properly during its major events.
Yeah, you always have. You know, when I got there, the beginning of 2009, 2009 wound up being a very interesting year in golf because, first of all, it was back to Bethpage. You took the channel out there. We did shows from Bethpage early in the week. I did my morning show. You were out there in the afternoon.
We went there.
You allowed Steve Torrey on the property to talk about golf? Again,
that was 2009, Gary?
Yes.
I didn't know what year that was.
That was 2009. That was the U.S. Open that we never knew when it was going to end. Ricky Barnes was leading, and then David Duvall came on late, and Mickelson was right in the mix, and it wound up being Lucas Glover, who was the lone survivor after a horrible week of weather. It was a Monday finish. It was hard to keep up. Yeah, so you brought...
And we also went there for the PGA. They had a PGA there. It was. It was the one with Koepka won it.
Yes.
We went and Tiger
you guys
came
were there.
Back after he won the Masters in 19.
That's correct.
So we did the shows at the PGA there. Went to Shinnecock. You know, we went out to Shinnecock and did a show from the 18th fairway at Shinnecock. So we have, you know, here's an example. Well, when it's in the New York metropolitan area, we have made the attempt, SiriusXM, to go out there and cover the event. So I think we've done a pretty good job covering. Now, we're not going to go to, you know, Southern Hills. You know, we're not going to go out to St. Louis. But, you know, when it's in the New York area, and again, FedEx Cup, what else do you know? That was before 08 when I was on FAN, and I went to cover the FedEx Cup at the Westchester Country Club. And he's a perfect example. So I've done a better job with golf, you know, since probably Tiger arrived in 96.
Yeah, and one other thing about 09, at the end of that year, that was the Tiger scandal. So and it wound up being, for me, it was very good perspective for me because, you know, I wasn't somebody who was waking up, whether I was in Charlotte or then after I was with you in Orlando, I wasn't reading the back pages of the New York Daily News and the New York Post like you do every day. And when the Tiger scandal hit, as you remember, he was on the back page of those two newspapers
for almost a month. Yeah, a month.
Day in and day out. Another girl, this, that, and the other. Do you remember, we talked about that day in and day out.
Yeah, we did a lot of it.
We did a ton of it. So as you started to play golf and you started to get better and you're competent, you're competitive, you're chippy.
I'm not a good golfer, but I'm competent.
You're chippy. You dig in, you work at it, you wanna try to get better.
I'm a good grinder.
So as you join a club and you start to play, what did you find redeemable about playing golf?
I love the tournaments. I think when I think about it right now, I love the competition of tournaments. When you can play the member guests and the 3-day member and president cups and governor's cups and all. So the tournament play for me is what I enjoy most of all. And I remember the first member that I played at Shorehaven was in 2006. You know, the 7 flights, 8 teams per flight. So you got 5,612 golfers out there. So my partner and I, Jim Krauser, good player, he three-putted one green in 63 holes.
Wow.
And Shorehaven is a very good little golf course.
Oh, no doubt.
Not much about it. It's a good little golf course. He won three-putt. We won the flight, and we got to the 3-hole playoff and advanced into the 18th hole. Both balls count with handicap, and I hit a ball out of bounds, and so did Jim, and we lost. But I walked out of there with about $3,500. won the flight, won this, won that. And I remember walking out of that was so much fun. And I had him, and that's the reason. But that was so much fun. And that was really my first remembrance. About 18 years ago. That was my first remembrance of how fun golf could be from a competitive standpoint. That's the only, I have won a member one time since. The only time I have won one of those majors. But I enjoy going out there, and I enjoy playing in a big spot. Now, I am playing this Challenge Cup currently, and I call him the Hickey Diesel, Bob Hickey. Hickey's a 9 handicap. You know, it's 68 teams. You're in 4 brackets. With handicap, it's a blind draw, and you have to play each match within a certain period of time. And, you know, you continue to play until you get to the Final Four and then the finals at the end of the summer, September. Well, in our first match, we were down 1-2 excellent players, and I was getting a stroke on 18, and I got a 4-for-3 to force a playoff, and I parred the second playoff hole, number 2, a little uphill par 3, to win that match. We played our second match last weekend, and I did not play well early, down 3 again after the 10th hole. I par 11, 5-for-4 win. Bob goes out there and pars 12. We're down 1. We both have 13 and 14. I win 15 with a par, little par 3 downhill, 158 to get even. Bob giving strokes to everybody on 16. And they're in the middle of the fairway. It's a long par 4, dogleg left over a hill and marsh and everything else. And he's in a bunker on his drive. He gets up and down for a 5. They 3-putt. We win the hole. We're up 1, and we have 17 and 18. So the Hickey Diesel has carried your little partner here to the round of 16, which we'll play this weekend. So it's that kind of stuff that I thrive on. And then I talk about it on the air, Slowpoke Divine, Doug Smith, and it becomes a little bit of a skit. And, you know, people get, you know, it's me, so I can get away with it. So people, you know, when you're a good talk show host, people live your life.
They do. They absolutely do.
Life. They follow your life like they're part of it. Timmy Russo coaching in Northern Arizona is a perfect example. They follow your life. And so I'm able to make that part of the show. So the Hickey Diesel right now is a big deal. Now we're playing Sunday morning at 8. We're going to play against a 13-17. Bob's going to have to give strokes out. He's the 8 or 9. And right now I'm playing to an 18, and I'm better than that. But there's going to be strokes all over the place. And I'm going to have to par some of the holes where I'm getting strokes. And some of the times I have not, my chipping is spotty. I'm not going to get up and down a lot. So if I'm not getting on in regulation, that's going to be a little bit of a dicey proposal. But we're capable of winning this next one. And then I can talk about it for 3 weeks and I can have fun with the round of 8. So that's what we'll do here. Let's hope we win Sunday morning.
Well, and it is, I don't know if when you look, there are a lot of things I know you took into consideration when you left for Sirius, but I don't think in your wildest dreams you could have thought that. And people were living vicariously through you and Mike beforehand, but the autonomy you have now, you know, you joke about taking your staff, and I love the fact that Eddie's voice was actually heard on this show off in the distance. But the idea that you're going to take guys and take them to presidential libraries, these aspects of your life, which I know tickle the hell out of you, and I know you're there primarily to amuse yourself, but people are into this stuff. When your daughter wasn't getting into certain schools and you went on a tirade suggesting that Boston College hadn't won an important football game in decades, as if that had anything to do with admissions.
Right, didn't get in. She got to Notre Dame and not BC, which drove me crazy. 100%.
But the golf stuff, like you recapping rounds on the air, never in your wildest dreams did you think that you were going to be in a place that you would do that and people would call up and want to ask you questions about your rounds of golf.
Especially for a course I'm not that familiar with.
Of course not. What do you mean not that familiar with? They don't know anything about it.
A guy like you can identify because you have an unbelievable memory with golf courses. You probably may not remember every hole at Shorehaven.
I remember a lot of them.
7 or 8.
Remember a lot of them.
A lot of them. And Gary there that day probably shot a 72 or a 73. He played great. But, you know, it took him for a member guest, a one-day member guest. But the, I mean, I have a memory. I remember every shot.
Yes, you do.
It's crazy. I mean, and that's probably one of the reasons why I'm not as good in sports as I'd like to be, because my memory is too good and I'm more focused on memorizing. I don't have a short memory. and you almost want to have a short memory to be good in golf and tennis. You don't want to have to focus, well, boy, on five in 2008, I did this. You don't want to be thinking about that kind of stuff. And that is what I do, which gets me in trouble. I can probably tell you a lot of the holes that I did over there in Scotland. I birdied 18, by the way, at St. Andrews. Did I ever tell you that story?
No.
I hit a three wood 215 yards and made a 15-foot putt.
Why did you have 215 into a little cupcake hole that's 360 yards?
I hit a bad, well, you know, I hit it way right off the tee, and I was near that fence. And yeah, I said, geez, I told my caddy, and those caddies are great.
They're great.
Let me hit the three wood, and I hit a great three wood, and I hit it on a green, and I made the putt for a birdie. I only shot in a 91 or a 2 that day, but I birdied 18, most importantly. But, I mean, it's, and I remember that like it was yesterday. That's a special occurrence, birdieing 18 at St. Andrews. But it's those kinds of things that I remember when I play, and it adds to the fun of me describing the golf. And, of course, on Sunday, if we win Sunday, I'm not sure if it will be the lead because the trading deadline in baseball, but somewhere along the line, the Hickey Diesel is going to be a big deal on Monday. And you'd be amazed the people at Shorehaven, the members who know that I'm going to do this and they want to get on top of it.
Of course.
They got a way to get to Sirius. Or they hear it on the app because everybody tells me, everybody knows who the Hickey Diesel is. And he's a lawyer, very stoic guy who wouldn't have heard of Christopher Russo if he fell on him before the last, say, year or two, and now he understands. See, when you play with me at Shorehaven, there's a certain amount of pressure.
Of course.
If you play well, you're going to get accolades on the radio. But if you stink, that's going to be part of the deal, too. So you got to take the good with the bad.
Of
course.
That's
what makes it fun.
Let's talk about Scotland, because I said, look, your 60th birthday, look, you could go anywhere. And you have a very curious mind, and you're interested in going to a lot of places. So you go over there, and I know that you didn't have an affection for the old course like I do, and that's understandable. The places that you really loved, what are the few that you went, my God, this is really sublime? What were the ones that really are just going to hold up in your mind as being super special?
Yeah, I thought St. Andrews was a little quirky.
It is.
And I think, you know, I everybody tells you got to play it two or three times to really get a feel of it. I thought it was a little quirky. I think the day at Muirfield is a day that you can't beat. Remember, that's a private club, and they only allow you to play on Tuesdays and Saturdays. But we stayed at the hotel there.
You stayed at Grey Walls. Oh, did you? Of course you did.
Oh, what a hotel that is. Stayed there. We had the dinner there one night, and we had that library bar, 12 guys. But you play, and then you come in for lunch, you put a shirt and tie on, you have the mushroom soup, and then you go back out there to play the alternate shot. So, I mean, I think that experience alone was tremendous.
Chris, that's the best day of my life. That I did that a couple times with my dad. Think about that.
That's
I had that day with my father a couple times. And like you said, you play your own ball in the morning, you go in coat and tie, the most gluttonous lunch you've ever had in your life. And you go back out there and you play in 2 hours and 40 minutes, play an alternate shot. You're looking out over the Irish Sea and you're going, there's nothing better than this.
100%. And I had a room there on the 10th tee at that hotel, which was superb. So that experience alone is tremendous. I loved Troon. I just love the activity around Troon. It was the second course we played. I love the activity. We had bad weather, too. But I love the activity around it. I love the airport. I love the train. You know, I liked the postage stamp hole. I mean, I just love the activity. I played poorly there, which was a factor, but which bothered me. But I did love it, Troon. I love King's Barn. The only knock I'd have on King's Barn is if you didn't know you were in Ireland, you could have been in Oregon. You know, not Ireland, Scotland. You could have been
sure.
in Oregon.
Sure.
I mean, it's a situation where it's right on the coastline there. And I'm sure that coastline, you know, you could substitute that coastline for a lot of different coastlines and not realize that you're in Scotland. You could be at Bandon Dunes, for instance.
Yeah,
that would
that's
be
fair.
If I had a knock. I love the course.
It's wonderful.
But, yeah, but I would say that. Now, we played Carnoustie, and none of us loved Carnoustie as much. First off, they put us on a green tees, because these starters out in Europe, they're nervous that, you know, the American's going to come over and they stink and they want to have vain tee boxes. And so as a result, they claim they're this and they put them there and then they slow up the whole place. And so they put us on the front tee boxes. It almost made it too easy. 95-yard par three. It almost made it, it almost took a little of the fun away. So I like another crack at Carnoustie. And I got a 5 on 18. I didn't get over there into the creek there in the middle, but I played the hole properly, laid up on the green, 2-putt 5. I also parred 1 and parred 2 there, but I didn't, and I mean, over those big bunkers on the back nine that border the green, I forget what hole it is. You know, that big bunkers, there's like huge bunkers on one of those holes on the back.
Well, 14 is, the 14th hole.
14th hole, is that what it is? It's 14. So, I mean, I probably deserve to do that one again. I am working on a trip for next year and take Tim. And the fat guy in Rapid is putting it together. And, you know, we might go up to Aberdeen and Dornish, because one of our guys who played with us in Scotland in 19 stayed and he went up to Northern Scotland with his wife who joined him.
Sure.
And he said Dornish was like an unbelievable golf course.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never been there. And that is of the handful of places I desire to go to, getting to Dornoch where Donald Ross, that was home for him.
I could see doing that. Yeah. I can. And I got to get to Ireland. I went there last summer, last May with my wife, who had never been, and Oldhead and Hinch. I got to try to play. And I love Dingle. You know, it's out there in the inlet there. We went there for lunch. I didn't play golf once. I got to go back there one day and play, too.
You should. Whether it's the Southwest Coast or if you go – Royal County Down might be as fine a championship golf course as there is in the world.
I haven't done that. And I saw it there where they had the Ryder Cup. I mean, I saw that course too. There's a lot of different ways to do it at Ireland. And it's a lot of driving in between the golf courses. Scotland is not as much driving.
That's correct.
You can go to all the courses in one little area in Scotland. You can't do that in Ireland. So it takes more of a planning deal. But, yeah, I wish I was a little better. I have not played that great this summer. Again, my handicap, my index was around a 13 at the beginning of the summer, and it's jumped to a 15.5. I really haven't played well, but I'm dangerous. You know, like, example, the June 3rd when I had 8 pars and 20 holes and par 18 and blah, 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 won that first Challenge Cup match. But I didn't play well in the President's Cup. I'm playing in the member, August 8th, 9th, and 10th, and I'm taking Tim for the first time. So father, son, member, 27, 18, 18.
Be fantastic.
That's going to be fun, but he puts too much pressure on himself, and he's 24 years of age. He's a legacy member, so he can play in those events. I'm a little worried how he's going to handle it because he thinks he should win. Tim, this is not that easy. You know, you got to win holes. Nobody cares about your 5-foot putt on 9 for a double bogey when we've lost a hole. So forget it. It's about winning holes. And match play is about that, where you got to throw away, you know, a couple of bad holes in a row. It is when you do well. Here's an example, Gary. Last weekend with Bob and I, he had 2 bad holes, 5 and 15. 5 is the 223-yard par 3. 15 is the downhill 158-yard pound over sandbars and everything else. I parred both holes. That's how you got to do it. That's how you got to do it.
Absolutely.
He's a 9 handicap. He shot an 83, and he had 2 terrible holes, doubles on 5 and 15. So what does Chris Russo do?
You got to step up.
I got a halve on 5. That's a 213 par 3 on the green, 2-putt 3. I have 5, and I have 50. I won 15.
That's so strong.
That's how you win match play. That's how you win match.
No question. You've only got a couple minutes. I got one thing I have to implore you to do, and then I'm going to get you out of here with a couple quick questions. The Augusta thing, I've told you, nobody of your stature who has had the voice that you've had in sports can't be in his early 60s and have not attended a Masters.
Or Wimbledon.
Okay, that's unimaginable that you've not been to those two events. Sirius is the radio partner of the Masters. The idea that Eric Spitz and Scott Greenstein are going to the Masters and you're not, you have to go next year. You have to experience it. If it means you miss Friday, a Friday at the beginning of April, so be it. You have to go.
Yeah, that's a week after the Final Four. I do. I have to. And PMAC is always telling me about Wimbledon too. My Jeannie is going to want to go to the Masters as well. That's, you know, and I sort of don't want to have to work when I take her. And you go to the Masters, you got to go on the air a little bit. And remember, for us, when I do a show, I'm basically off campus. So it's not like I'm going to be able to do the show from the press box, from the press tent. So that makes it a little trickier, you know, to do the Masters show in a parking lot, you know, which I don't see the golf course, is a little tricky. You got to keep that in mind. That's got a little something to do with it.
It does.
And Wimbledon, same thing. You know, Wimbledon doesn't care if Chris Russo is doing a radio show from there. So they're going to put me where they're going to put me. I mean, I got to do 5 hours and I got to do it. You know, let's see, I would be on the air 1 o'clock, 6 o'clock at night. So where is Wimbledon going to put Chris Russo 8 until 11 on a weeknight?
Right.
I mean, you know, listen, they play into 11. So theoretically they can put me somewhere, but then they're not going to put me adjacent to center court. So that's got a little something to do with it here. The logistics of where I do the show.
Fair enough. All right. Let me get you out of here with these five quick questions. The best golf moment in your career that you discussed, is there a moment, an event?
Faldo and Norman, the collapse of 96.
96. Very good.
We
one.
We got a lot of mileage on that.
Okay. In your estimation, what do you think was the best era for men's professional golf?
Early 60s with Player, Palmer, Nicklaus.
Hard to beat. The golf course you most want to play?
Wow. I played Pebble Beach. I played Bordeschwall. I played the Wingfoots. I played East Lake.
You haven't played Oakmont. You haven't played Fisher's Island. You haven't played Augusta National.
Pine Valley or Augusta.
Okay, Pine Valley or Augusta. Okay, who do you think is the most interesting voice in golf?
Wow. Chamblee.
Hard to beat. Provocative.
He's got something to say.
No question. All right, last thing. Who do you think the best baseball player who also played golf was all time?
Baseball player who was a major leaguer?
Yeah.
And yes. He was not a PGA player.
Well, there was one. You should know this. Sam Bird. Sam Bird was on the 1932 Yankee World Series. He was primarily a pinch runner in his career. He's the only man to play in a World Series and the Masters.
I didn't know that.
Sam Bird. He finished third and fourth in the Masters in 1941 and 42 after his baseball career.
Well, I didn't know that. So right now, the best major leaguer who would be a golfer? Well, that's a good question. You know, Jeff McNeil is a good golfer from the Mets.
Yep.
He's a scratch. Are you asking or telling?
No, I'm asking. I'm not here.
I don't know that answer.
Yeah, look.
I mean, obviously, you know, Mark Mordor was a good golfer.
He's a very good player.
Rick Roden was
excellent,
a very good
player.
Golfer. Those two.
Yeah, Smoltz is a very good player.
And Smoltz. Can't forget him.
Smoltz
yes.
Chris, I'll leave you with this. My favorite photo in golf, maybe one of my favorite photos, period. The 1929 U.S. Open at Wingfoot, Bobby Jones won the event in a playoff. There's a photo of him hitting a tee shot. You know who is kneeling behind at the back of the tee watching him?
I'm going to say Ruth.
You better believe it.
Wow.
Think about that. Ruth watching Jones in 1929.
Ruth and Sarazen made a living at Shorehaven in the 30s. Because Sarazen.
Did they really?
Yes, they did. All right, I got to run.
Okay, listen, thank you.
You're the best. Keep me posted.
Okay.
I love you, Gary.
Love you, too. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, thank you again to Mad Dog. It's amazing. He's in his early 60s, and he's got his radio program, and he's got not one, but he's got two television shows. He is now the guy on Wednesdays on First Take with Stephen A. Smith. You know why? Because he's interesting. And I don't know if you noticed there right at the end when he said, keep me posted. It's what he always says to me. And he says it to a few other people, people that he has on his show. Like, keep you posted about what? He is an interesting cat. I love him. And thank you to not only him, but most importantly to you for listening and watching to this Five Clubs Conversation.